Yes, indeed. It's that time of the week where we speak to AB Dowji on the Big Picture program. Quickly, a reminder of your SMQ for today, Friday. What's your favorite fried food? Number two, Mandela statue, good gesture or wasted effort? Number three, one funny thing that someone told you this week that changed your mood. But now it's time to change your mood as Uncle AB joins us on the lines. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Uncle AB.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How are you this morning?
Alhamdulillah, I got my mountain bike ready and I'll be just climbing up Isipingo Hills.
No, man, I'm envious of you here. Yeah, it's starting to get cold. Durban is always lekker hot.
Oh, lekker, yeah, bright and breezy. Very beautiful day, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. Uncle AB, what's the story that caught your eye this week?
Dear listeners of Radio Islam, the story that caught my eye this week was about me. Yes. Me, AB Dowji. And it's quite a story. But I must add that many learned men, prominent scholars, strongly advised me to ignore this story. But you know me, if something is on my chest, it's like wind. It's got to come out, otherwise it can cause great discomfort. So, what's this story about?
Tell us.
Yes, I told you it's about me. Mm-hmm. But let me first give you a preamble. An introduction. I just love suspense, especially because I can see that you are impatient.
Yes.
So, let me start by saying that lots of time, effort, and energy goes into preparing this program. Lots of research and analysis. But most important is to carefully assess the material to ensure that it is accurate and measured and sober-minded. Therefore, I won't say anything, for example, about Israel that would be construed, that will be regarded as being anti-Semitic, because that could take you straight to the Human Rights Commission. And in any case, it's just plain wrong. Right? Anti-Semitism is just plain wrong. It's hate speech. Of course, in what I say, there is bias. One has to denounce oppression, hypocrisy, and, of course, extravagance also. Hence, I always have a go at the good old custodians. So when you are in the public sphere, you are bound to attract some criticism. Thankfully, alhamdulillah, I don't get much of that. Occasionally, some chap would laughingly say, "Hey, Dowji, I know our country is suffering from drought, but your joke last week was really dry, eh?" In 10 years, I remember just one instance. Once when I got a really vulgar call from a hothead, all because he didn't like my joke. Let me tell you the joke. A Sutri guy, an Urdu-speaking guy, and a Meman guy were sitting on the beach. The Sutri guy found something in the sand and began rubbing it. Out popped a genie, and declared, "I am prepared to give each one of you a challenge. I'm just compressing this joke just to save time, Molana. So the genie says, "I will give each one of you a challenge. Throw something into the sea, and if I can find it and fetch it, you lose. But if I cannot find it, I will give you 10,000 rands." And the Suti fella then threw a pen far into the sea, and the genie dived in, and in 10 seconds, brought out the pen. Next, it was the turn of the Urdu-speaking fellow. And he reached into his pocket, took out a paper clip, and threw it far into the sea. 15 seconds later, the genie found it. Now it was the Meman guy's turn. He put his hand into his pocket, and he took out a Disprin, and he threw it far into the sea. So, dear listeners, that was the joke. What does it say? That the Meman guy was sharp, very clever indeed. And so it was a compliment to the Meman guy. But guess what happened? Later in the morning, after I said the joke on this radio station, I got a call from this hothead. No greeting or anything, just bumper to bumper F words. "Why are you picking on Mehmans, eh? What's your problem with Mehmans? I'll come and sort you out." Of course, the F word was liberally sprinkled throughout his outburst. It was a glorious Jummah morning, and this brother was more concerned about defending his Memanness by swearing than to be mindful that it's a holy day. He heard Meman, and he flipped completely. Anyway, you get all types, it makes the world so interesting.
It
and
does.
I'm certain that there are some people out there listening to my program who don't like what I say or maybe how I say it, but still they listen. And perhaps they marinate, like when you put the chicken in a bowl with all the masala and you pour the yogurt over it and keep it covered in the fridge for the biryani the next day. And so they marinate, listening to you, but disliking you at the same time. Now, there is one such fellow in Durban, and I have a pretty good idea who it is. So, he's got an axe to grind, eh? He's got a grudge steadily building up inside him, like he had too much of gadra beans and he's feeling all bloated. He has to let it out. His face is distorted. He is sweating. Got to let it out. He's got to hit at A.B. Dauji. And he does it. How? Well, he makes a claim, a statement. Here is the statement. There is an announcer on Radio Al Ansar, A.B. Dauji, who says that we should befriend the Shias. Is it permissible for a Muslim radio station to condone such an announcement? Let me read that statement again to you. There is an announcer on Radio Al Ansar, A.B. Dauji, who says that we should befriend the Shias. Is it permissible for a Muslim radio station to condone such an announcer? Well, well, what do you think of that, dear listeners? Let me tell you this. Let me tell you what I think of this statement. It is a barefaced, total, absolute, complete lie. I have never, ever, let me repeat that. I have never, ever said that we should befriend the Shias. Never. Not even once. Did you, dear listeners, ever hear me make such a statement on my program? And you know what? My program in Durban is almost identical to this one. With just maybe an interview with some prominent person added to the program. But in all respects, everything I say on the station is identical also on Radio Al Ansar. So this guy with a stomachache is a bare-faced liar. His statement is completely false. Now here is the best part. He sent the statement posed as a question to the Majlis. And the Majlis, in its wisdom, decided to take this lie and comment on it, calling me all kinds of names. He addressed me as this Dauji character. Well, that is in fact true. Lots of people actually say, hey, you are a real character, Dauji. So the Majlis took this chap's lie and spread it around. Isn't that wonderful? Very Islamic, isn't it? But that's the Majlis. It has a character of its own. But I challenge this coward here in Durban, this rat, to come out of his hole and tell me to my face, when did I make such a statement? You know, it's so nice to snipe at someone anonymously. You, Mr. Anonymous, must be sitting there, smugly smiling to yourself, satisfied that you got back at A.B. Dauji, did some damage, put him in his place, eh? Isn't it wonderful? You speak lies in defense of Islam. Actually, it's not even in defense of Islam. It's just to satisfy some evil urge, perhaps some jealousy or twisted vindictiveness that lurks within you, that turns you into a cowardly, lying rat. I shall make dua for you. Now, let me also say something else. By the way, it's a job lot. It's a job lot attack by the Majlis. The headline refers to Radio Al Ansar in Durban as Radio Ansaru Shaitan, a Shia entity. It's also called an agent of Iblis. Oof. And you know what, Sheikh, your radio station has also got an honorable mention, but not very descriptive, just Radio Shaitan of the no-name brand, Jamaatul Juhala, I'm always amused at the very colorful language in the Majlis. You know, I can't wait to read it when I get it, eh? Serious.
Now, Uncle Abi, there's lots to still talk about here. You've got the U.S. election stuff to tell us about. What's happening in the U.S. elections?
I'm going to tell you the story, even if you try to deflect it. Say, there you are, folks. The weird, bizarre, and outrageous story that we usually start with. And here's another one that will make you incredulous. How often has this happened to you when you went to a restaurant with family or friends? The waiter brings the bill in that leather folder, and it's placed on a side plate. You pick it up, and then someone else grabs it and wants to pay the bill. No, I'm paying. No, don't be silly. I'm paying. And so there's a tug of war, and then the Lani puts his credit card in there and holds and hands it over to the waiter, and it's all over. Well, it didn't quite end that way in a restaurant in Turkey. The scene, a restaurant in Istanbul. İdris Alakus, that's his name, İdris Alakus, is eating in the restaurant. İdris's friend, Hasan Özdemir, enters with his two friends. İdris invites them to join him. They all have soup. After the meal, İdris is preparing to leave and ask the waiter for the bill. To his horror, he finds that his friend, Hasan, has already paid the bill. And he asks Hasan, why you paid the bill? And so an argument starts. And İdris leaves, but a short while later he returns, armed with a gun. He shot Hasan and his two friends and he runs away. The waiters rush to Hassan's assistance, but it's too late. Hasan is dead and his two friends are rushed to hospital. The whole thing is caught on the restaurant's video. İdris was caught later and taken into custody. So what do you think of that, dear listeners? And what is the moral of the story? When I go out to eat with my best friend İdris Kamisa, I must let him pay. Do you think he will agree to pay the whole bill? He is a Memon after all, eh? Ish! I better put my phone off the hook.
Okay, let me now move on to U.S. elections.
I'm making you nervous.
Now, U.S. elections, right? What's happening? What's the latest there?
Donald Trump has been saying repeatedly recently, of course, I can be presidential. I can be very presidential. In fact, I can be so presidential that I would be completely boring. Well, on Wednesday, he gave a very important foreign policy speech, and he was very, very presidential. Usually he talks a whole lot of sheer nonsense. I looked at him as he was speaking and I thought, this doesn't sound like Donald Trump at all. In fact, it wasn't Donald Trump. I'm referring to his speech. It didn't have the usual muddled, disjointed, ungrammatical, nonsensical style that we always witness. His speech was measured, fluent, clear, eloquent, unhesitating, and very structured. It was just flowing. It wasn't Donald Trump. Why? Because he was using a teleprompter. In fact, he was using two, which is, of course, a big TV screen in front to the left and another to the right, so that as he moved his head, looking left and right, addressing the whole crowd, he was reading his speech from the screens. And the speech was written by a team of advisors. It was a very important speech. Donald Trump's position on foreign policy, how will he deal with the world? And the world was holding its breath. But you know what? Although a whole team wrote his speech, the whole thing lacks substance. It just said what he has always been saying, except that it was more polished. Basically, as I said before, he says, this is what I'm going to do, but you don't hear how he's going to do it. I'm going to make America great again. I'm going to bring back jobs. I'm going to make America great again. I'm going to keep Muslims out. I'm going to make America great again. I'm going to keep the Mexicans out. I'm going to make America great again. You know, this reminds me of a time, some time ago, and to get extra pocket money, I sold encyclopedias door to door for a short while. Remember those old days when people knocked at your door to sell things to you? Well, in selling encyclopedias, you have to use a lot of psychology. One particular trick was to get the person to say yes to every question you ask as you are delivering your sales pitch in their lounge. Dear Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, don't you want the best education for your kids? The obvious answer is yes. Don't you think these books are beautifully bound? Yes. Don't you think that it's amazing that information is at your fingertips? Yes. Don't you want to save time for your kids in doing their homework? They don't have to go to the library anymore. Yes. Don't you think this beautiful bookcase will look great in your lounge? Yes. So while you are selling the set, you get a yes and a yes and a yes. By the time you finish your 45-minute sales pitch, they said 100 yeses. The head is full with yeses. So when you ask them the final question, do you want this encyclopedia set, it's almost impossible for them to say no. In fact, you don't even have to ask them if they want to buy it. You just said, do you want the bookcase in mahogany or in pine? You know what? It's a shark's business selling encyclopedias. Once when I finished my selling selling speech, a gentleman was very, very happy to sign the contract. Guess what he did, Sheikh? He signed with an X at a cross. I was startled. Sir, you didn't sign. And he said, hey, boss, I can't read or write, but I really want this encyclopedia. You know, I was totally shocked. I did such a great selling job that he wanted the set. I stammered something like, okay, I have to take this document to the office. They will process it. And he said, please, sir, I really want it. Now, if he was a rich guy, I probably would have put the whole deal through to give him some feeling of prestige and an encyclopedia in his lounge. But this guy was very poor, hardly earning much, and the installments were quite high, about 250 rand a month, lots of money at that time. So I got into the company combi that came to fetch us salespeople, and I told everybody what happened, and then immediately tore up the contract. I will never forget that episode. Lucky we got Google today. This shark business has now completely declined. So what has this got to do with Donald Trump?
Yes, what?
Yeah, don't be impatient, okay? I will tell you that psychology is the same. Donald Duck says repeatedly, don't you want America to be great again? Yes, everyone shouts. Don't you want more jobs? Yes. Don't you want to keep the Muslim terrorists out? Yes. Don't you want to keep jobs at home here in the U.S. instead of outsourcing them to India and China? Yes. Don't you want our ladies to be protected from the Mexican rapists? Yes. Don't you want strawberry and creams for breakfast every morning? Yeah. Well, he didn't quite say the last one. But you know what I mean. It's pure psychology. Politicians and encyclopedia salesmen. Therefore, after all the yeses, it's hard to say no. Do you want this beautiful set of encyclopedias? Yes. Do you want to vote for me? Yes. Besides his slogan, which is on his T-shirt and on his cap, let's make America great again, there's another theme that he frequently pushes, respect. The world doesn't respect us. Why? Because Obama is weak. He went to Cuba and nobody important met him at the airport. He went to Saudi Arabia, no one important met him at the airport. Why? Because no one respects Obama anymore. No one respects America anymore. The Russians don't respect us. The Chinese don't respect us. See how they are behaving in the South China Sea? Because we are weak. Do you want the world to respect us again? Yes. I will make the world respect us again when I am president of the United States. So, dear listeners, the psychology is wonderful. His speech was something like what George Bush said. Are you for us or are you against us? His whole speech was about one slogan. America first. Everything we do must ensure that we put America first. And everybody shouts, yes. In other words, self-interest. We must not get involved in the world unless it benefits us. Now, many may describe it as an isolationist speech. That's how it's been described, isolationist speech. He says that the U.S. spends trillions of dollars and loses thousands of lives fighting wars abroad. That must stop. You know what my answer to that is?
Mm-hmm.
When he says that, I would say, yes, please. Stay at home and mind your own business. Stop interfering in other people's business. Guess what? That Donald was against George Bush's war on Iraq, eh? Really, he was against the Iraq war. Maybe, just maybe, this Ullu may do what he says, makes less war in the world. So, in the end, he's just George Bush with a bad hairstyle. And both seriously Badam Dude deficient.
Gravy, let's see. Today we're going to check your summarizing skills. You still need to tell us about Salah Abdussalam being extradited to France, Palestine as well, and still the light at the end of the tunnel. And we still got a quiz to come. Let's see.
Time. How many minutes we got?
I'll give you about 9 minutes.
Right. The big terrorists that planned and carried out the attacks in Brussels, and also now we hear Paris, was extradited to France from Brussels. Most of the reports described him as a jihadist. Okay, so here's a message to this great defender of Islam. Dear Mr. Mampara jihadist, if you want to take part in jihad, then you better first study the Quran very carefully and find out exactly what are the terms and conditions relating to conducting jihad. There are very strict rules, the circumstances under which you can kill and who you are allowed to kill. So did you study that in depth before you embarked on your killing spree in Paris, in which 130 people were killed, even some Muslims? Well, according to his own lawyer, Sven Mary, Abdussalam never read the Quran and lived his life as if in a GTA, that means Grand Theft Auto game. The jihadist is said to be the mastermind of the Brussels and Paris attack. Mastermind. He planned everything. He was the brains behind the project. Well, it seems like here was another patient with serious BDD, Badam Dude deprived. His own lawyer described him as having the intellect of an empty ashtray. Good heavens, what an insult. That's a hell of an insult. Having the intellect of an empty ashtray, not even one full of stompies. And here's a full statement from his lawyer. He's a little idiot from Molenbeek with a petty criminal background, a follower rather than a leader. He has the intellect of an ashtray. His vacuousness is abysmal. He added, this lawyer, he says he's the perfect example of the GTA generation who think they're living in a video game. He and his mates have managed to give an entire religion a bad name. I asked him if he'd read the Quran, which I have, and he replied that he'd read its interpretation on the internet. For simple minds, it's perfect. The web is the most that they can grasp. And the most important part of that statement, Sheikh, is that he and his mates have managed to give an entire religion a bad name. Well, dear listeners, there are many more such misguided individuals, so-called jihadists, who have not only inflicted damage on people and property with their bombs, but also did enormous damage to the image of Islam. There's a summary.
Right. Now moving on to Palestine. What's happening?
Right. 4 minutes left. Yesterday, I felt very, very, very sad. I still felt sad. I was deeply saddened when I saw the photograph of a brother and sister lying on the ground, shot by Israeli soldiers. Did you cover that already?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Well, I read the Israeli newspapers and they said that these terrorists were about to stab the soldiers. But I also read another version of events. If you've covered it, then I suppose...
No. Elaborate.
Now, it says here, this is another version. Witnesses to an alleged stab attempt on Israeli border police at a military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday said two siblings shot dead during the incident posed no threat at the time the Israeli officer killed them. Witnesses told Ma'an News Agency that 23-year-old Maryam Saleh Hassan Abu Ismail, 5 months pregnant, and her 16-year-old brother Ibrahim were en route to Jerusalem when they took a path intended for vehicles, not pedestrians, into Kalanbiya checkpoint near Ramallah. The two were apparently unable to understand Israeli officers yelling in Hebrew and stopped walking. Witnesses said it appeared that Ibrahim attempted to grab his sister's hand and move away from the officers when they opened fire on her. Maryam fell to the ground, and when Ibrahim attempted to aid her, he was shot in his tracks. A Palestinian bus driver present at the scene, Muhammad Ahmed, told Ma'an News that the Israeli officer opened fire on Maryam, was standing behind a cement block some 20 meters away from her at the time. The driver said it did not appear that Maryam or her brother posed any threat when the officer shot them. Finally, Palestinian locals and witnesses to the incident, Ahmed Taha, told Ma'an that Israeli officers approached the two after they had been shot and had fallen to the ground before opening fire on them again to ensure that they were dead, adding that the officers could have moved the two away without opening fire. Tala alleged that the officers planted knives on the scene, photographs of which were distributed by Israeli police, who said they had been in Maryam and Ibrahim's possession. The witness account collected following the incident contradicted the Israeli police reports that the officer opened fire after Maryam threw a knife in their direction. Local source said Maryam was the mother of a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old and 5 months pregnant. She had reportedly obtained a permit from the Israeli authorities to enter Jerusalem for the first time when she was crossing on Wednesday. Well, the Israelis have their version about what happened, and the Palestinians have their version. You know what's missing? A video of the events. Yes, whenever there's a video, we know then what really happened.
Yes.
Like the young man who was lying on the ground completely harmless and was finished off by an Israeli soldier. The video did not lie. Anyway, Maryam was on her way to Al-Aqsa, her first visit to Jerusalem. It was not to be. She and her unborn child and her brother lay in the street shot like dogs. On this wonderful Jum'ah day, make dua for them and feel the sadness of their family today, that their hearts have been torn out from them. I really, really feel sad today, Sheikh.
Indeed, may Allah grant ease to the family and to the struggle of the Palestinians. May Allah make it easy for them and grant them victory, inshallah.
Ameen.
Uncle AB, the final one. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I had about half a dozen for you, but since you pushed for time, I'll only give you one, and I hope we get irate callers coming in. Anyways, Abdullah and Rashid were always first in the masjid for Fajr Salah. But Abdullah always beat him by a few minutes, always arriving earlier. And Rashid asked Abdullah, "Hey, how come you always manage to come so early?" And Abdullah replied, "Alhamdulillah, I am blessed. I have two fros, and they always compete with each other to see who can serve and assist me best. My clothes, my breakfast, they are really wonderful." So Rashid decided to do the same, and he married a second wife. Alhamdulillah, he now sleeps in the masjid.
For that this morning, and thank you so much for your time. You have a wonderful weekend out in Lekka, warm dubs.
Yeah, into the mountains now, sir.
Go for that cycle now, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.